All right, Dr. Lupo, I am happy to have you here today. If you would please explain the importance of going to a board-certified dermatologist who has experience in an artist's eye.
Well, there are a lot of physicians who are now opening med spas and doing sort of extra cosmetic procedures on top of their regular procedures that they do for what they are board certified. Say now we have OBGYNs and we have emergency room doctors, and a lot of people are doing these aesthetic procedures because it's not regulated. So it is on the patient to do their homework. And obviously, if you're going to deliver a baby, you want to see a board certified doctor in obstetrics and gynecology. If you're going to have your face injected, you want to go to a physician who's had residency training in an important and related specialty to aesthetics. This would classically be dermatology, plastic surgery, otolaryngology, with a subspecialty in facial plastic surgery, and ophthalmology with a subspecialty in ophthalmic plastic surgery, also known as an oculoplastic surgeon. The majority of research on the non-surgical treatments in aesthetic these days have been done more by dermatologists than even plastic surgeons. Plastic surgeons are very, very busy doing surgical procedures. They do facelifts, they do breast lifts, they do a lot of reconstructive things, they do a lot of amazing surgical procedures. But the non-surgical aspect of rejuvenation is really the domain of the board-certified dermatologists who do a lot of injections. There are board-certified dermatologists out there who don't do any aesthetics. They do pediatric dermatology or they strictly do complicated medical dermatology. But for example, I've been a board certified dermatologist since 1984, and I started injections and peels back in 1983 in my residency. So that gives you an idea of how far back I go with doing aesthetics. And as procedures have been added, I not only have been adapting to those, but I've actually been a participant in a lot of the clinical trials that resulted in the FDA approving these procedures. For example, I was on the FDA trial for Juvederm, for Kybella, for Volbella, for Botox, a number of these non-surgical procedures. And I think it's also important to look at the body of work of that board-certified dermatologist and make sure that their aesthetic eye sees what you want, and they will give you what you want, because there's a lot of variability in how you use Botox and the other neuromodulators, and you use fillers. There's a lot of individual variability, and that's where I talk about the artist's eye, because art is very subjective. And there's a lot of artwork out there that's worth thousands and millions of dollars that perhaps isn't to my aesthetic eye. So it's important for you to do two things as a patient. One, make sure that your physician has the necessary and appropriate training and board certification, meaning they actually pass the test to become board certified. And then make sure that what they can give you aesthetically and artistically is what you want and what you find appealing. Because this is an elective proposition. You don't have to have Botox. You don't have to have Juvederm. But you do want to make sure that if you're going to get these procedures, that the outcome will be what is pleasing to your aesthetic eye. So go to a physician who's board certified in either derm or plastic of some sort, and then see their pictures, look at their domain site, look at their befores and afters, and see, do these people look natural? And I want to look natural, so I want to choose this doctor. There are a lot of results out there that, in my opinion, don't look natural. Extremely big lips, extremely large cheekbones. And there are physicians out there who can give you that result if that's the result you wish. So it's a very, very personal and subjective decision, but it should be based on facts And the number one fact is proper training in the appropriate specialty and board certification in that specialty.
Wow, that was amazing. I mean, I'm telling you, you don't know how many ums and I have to cut out of these videos. I mean, seriously, that was very good.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you, the team has created some other questions that they wanted me to ask you. Is that okay? All right, perfect.
I figured we got 30 minutes. Let's do as much as you want.
Wonderful. Okay, perfect. All right, so how about a brief introduction to the Lupo Center for Aesthetic and General Dermatology?
When I was a resident from 1981 to 1984 in dermatology at Tulane, and when I was chief resident in 83 and 84, was the year that the Zyderm and Zyplast came out. Zyderm and Zyplast were the very first FDA-approved dermal fillers. I thought at that time that there was really going to be a market for non-surgical rejuvenation. And I started, when I was chief resident, a specific clinic at Tulane that was called the Resident Injection Clinic. And in that clinic, because it didn't exist before I was chief resident, I started it. That particular clinic, we would concentrate on these dermal injections, chemical peels, and sclerotherapy, which are the injections for leg veins. And we became very good at it because we practiced it on our friends, on each other, on our relatives, on acquaintances who wanted to let us learn how to do this new procedure. And when I finished my residency in 1984, I realized that there was no other practice in New Orleans that specialized in cosmetic dermatology. So I started my own practice from scratch rather than join an existing practice with an established physician, but it wasn't the vision that I had for what I wanted to have as a practice. So I started the Lupo Center for General and Aesthetic Dermatology in 1984, July of 1984, and I built it from the ground up. But in addition to that, I stayed on as a clinical faculty member at Tulane to once a month go and teach the residents what I was doing, the progress that was being made, the innovations that were being made, and I continued to teach the residents until full-time, once a month, until July of 2014, because that was 30 years, and I felt that I wanted to stop teaching that clinic when the residents still thought that I had something to contribute rather than them thinking, who is this old person? I can't learn anything from them. So now I continue to teach those residents, but it's sometimes it's on a less regular schedule. It gave me a little bit more freedom, and it actually gave other doctors who had been my residents an opportunity to replace me and to teach the next generation of residents. So I sort of passed the torch, if you will, but I do continue to teach. Another reason why I stepped back is in 2005, I and Dr. Ken Beer started something called the Cosmetic Boot Camp, where we actually started teaching residents in dermatology and incidentally plastic surgery fellows. We started teaching them what I was doing at Tulane, and it was called Cosmetic Bootcamp University. And so I had an outlet for my teaching, and I just was ready to try something new. I get bored if I'm always doing the same old thing. So I continue to teach, but the structure of my teaching is just a little bit different.
Makes sense. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about Botox and tell me about what concerns that people have that can be treated with Botox.
Well, the number one thing that people know that Botox works for are the frown lines between the eyebrows. They're called the glabellar frown lines, and they're nicknamed the 11s because there's usually two of them. But some people have just one, and some people have four or five. It just depends on how the muscles work. And what Botox does is it blocks the neurochemical attaching to the receptor at the muscle. So the nerve releases a neurochemical called acetylcholine that crosses the neuromuscular junction, attaches to the muscle receptor, and makes the muscle twitch. And what Botox and the other neuromodulators do is block the ability of the neurotransmitting chemical to have the effect on the muscle. So it's a neuromuscular blockade. The effect lasts anywhere from 3 to 5 months, typically. There's always variability. And then the body bypasses those receptors and actually has other receptors that they start using. And that's why the effect of Botox is not a permanent effect, and you have to repeat it at regular intervals. What I think is important for people to know is, besides the frown lines, it's also FDA approved for the forehead lines, the horizontal forehead lines, and also for crow's feet. And we use it, what is known as off-label, for other areas around the lips, on the neck, et cetera. And what off-label means, so that people understand, is that when something is FDA approved in the United States for one use, a physician, in their best judgment and based on their training and experience, decide that it can be used for another indication, let's say the lipstick lines, the doctor can use it, and it's called off-label of the FDA. The FDA governs and controls and restricts drugs and drug companies and devices and device companies. The FDA does not have any control over what is known as the practice of medicine. And so the physician, as long as what you're using is legal in the United States and you're not illegally importing something to do, but if you take Botox and you use it in an area, let's say for a downward turning mouth, that is an appropriate use of it as a physician. It's just not FDA approved, so the company can't advertise it or promote it for that use. That's what's illegal. And this is where the artistry and the experience of a physician become very important, because this is where the innovation comes from. When Botox was originally used in one area, doctors tried it in other areas and reported back to the company, hey, it works here too. And then the company will do their diligence in order to get it FDA approved so that they can advertise it also works for crow's feet, it also works for forehead lines. But it's very expensive for a drug company to get FDA approval. The regulatory hurdles that they have to jump and the hiring of physicians to do the formal clinical trial, it becomes a very expensive proposition. So they need to make sure that it's a cost-effective use of their funds for research, and that they're going to get a good return on the investment of the monies they put in for that research to get FDA approval, that when they do advertise it, there's enough of a market that patients will seek it out and they'll get a return on their investment for research.
Perfect. Okay. And let's talk about dermal fillers and what types you have at your office and what are they used for?
Well, I use every FDA-approved filler in my practice, with the exception of Belafil, which is a permanent filler. And the other fillers are all biodegradable, meaning that your body over time breaks it down. So if you don't like the result, and more importantly, as your face changes as you age, you can accommodate the changes and keep a more natural look. I think everyone's aware of how ridiculous and horrifying some of the long-term cosmetic result from silicone, which is a permanent filler, can cause distortion and over the course of a lifetime, because of the facial changes, it doesn't look natural anymore. So I prefer the biodegradable fillers, and I use the Juvederm family. I'm a particular fan of Sculptor and Radiesse in some patients who have a very gaunt look, because those are dermal stimulating devices in a way, that these fillers aren't just spatial fillers, They actually have been found to stimulate your body's production of your own new innate collagen. So I use the spectrum of fillers that are out there. And it's almost the analogy I would give you is like an artist picking different colors on the palette of their paint. And I use fillers, for example, there are some fillers that I use more superficially that are thinner, and I use them because they're less likely to cause any lumping, bumping because of their lower viscosity and their tendency to collect with each other, or be cohesive or lumpy. And then I'll use other fillers deeper. Volume is a good example of a filler that really needs to be injected deeper. Typically, Sculptor and Radiesse are injected a little bit deeper, whereas, you know, Volbella and Refine and Bellatero and the thinner form of Juvederm called Juvederm Ultra, as opposed to Ultra Plus, these are used more superficially. So it really is a matter of the experience and the knowledge of the board-certified doctor with the science behind the filler, so they can choose the appropriate filler for the patient's age, skin thickness, the depth of the line. Are you treating a line? Are you treating a fold? Or are you recontouring? So all of those things are the things that help me decide which filler I'm going to use in a patient. And most patients, unless they're very young, need a combination of fillers, a deeper one and a more superficial one, if you will.
All right. All right, well, let's jump right into Frexel Dual. What is that, and what techniques do you use, and who is a good candidate?
Well, Frexel Dual is one of the most popular devices in my practice. And the reason is because of the consistency of the results and the science behind the Frexel technology. Frexel is so good that as other fractional lasers came out, a lot of people thought they were getting Frexel at a spa or something, but they weren't getting Frexel. They were getting another fractional resurfacing device. I will pick up a Kleenex tissue in my office, and I'll show it to a patient, and I'll say, you know, this is a tissue. It's not necessarily a Kleenex, because Kleenex is a brand. Botox is a brand. Frexel is a brand. And what's different is it has a patented scanning technology that improves its precision, its uniformity, and its ability to have the results reproduced because of the device. So I would say that the best candidate for Frexel Dual is a patient who has sun damage and wants a retexturizing of the skin, a brightening of the skin, a firming of the skin surface, an improvement of finer lines, finer wrinkles, pores, and for mottled discoloration, brown spots, dullness of the skin. Those are the patients who are the best candidate for Frexel Dual. And it's called Dual because it's two lasers, one that works primarily at the surface and breaks up the pigmentation, and one that penetrates a little bit deeper that's better for the lines and for acne scars. So photorejuvenation, we use both of the lasers. If someone doesn't have a photo aging and superficial discoloration, and I'm treating acne scars, I'm going to just use one of the two lasers. So the beauty of Frexel Dual is, like Botox and like filler, it is doctor dependent in understanding the technology and picking the optimal settings and depth and number of passes, et cetera, to give the patient the best possible result.
All right. And what options, if somebody's coming in for laser dermatology, what options do you give them?
Well, I'll usually review with every patient the option of from the more aggressive to the less aggressive to the minimally invasive. One of the nice things about the Lupo Center is we have a number of different lasers. We don't just have one laser and try to fit a square peg into a round hole. We have the CO2 resurfacing laser, which is the most aggressive one. I would say the next one would be the Fraxel Dual. And then again, you can take the Fraxel Dual and you can do it more aggressively or less aggressively. And then we have other lasers. We have the Cool Touch laser. We have XLV. We have a non-laser light device called the IPL. We have radio frequency microneedling. We do regular microneedling. We do light chemical peels. And we do something called dermal infusion, which is sort of a combination between microdermabrasion and a light chemical peel. And the spectrum is so varied that a patient can decide, do I want to have one treatment of a more aggressive laser, or do I want to do a series of lesser lasers intensity? Clear and Brilliant, another one that is a lesser aggressive Fraxel, but the patient would need a series of them. But the trade-off is there's no downtime. So we're able to cherry pick and pick the patient's needs to their timetable. Some patients give me enough time that I can do a series of a lesser aggressive laser. Some people come in and they say, you know, I've got to look good in 6 weeks and we have to be more aggressive. So we cherry pick, we consult with the patient, we give them their options, the pros and cons of each of those options, and then the patient can make a truly informed decision with a lot of options. And we do our best to really guide the patient and not make their choice for them, but we do our best to guide them to our number one recommendation. And then if they want to go with something different than that, we try to make an understanding of why we made the primary recommendation. But we always listen to the patients. This is not a one-size-fits-all discussion. And the key is to be on the same wavelength with the doctor. Make sure the doctor understands your needs, understands how to improve what you want to have improved, and also how to make sure that you get the best results. And you also need to know that you're going to a physician, that if you have a rare complication, the experience of the physician recognizes the complication and treats it early and in the appropriate manner to mitigate any complications from the complication. So some of the times I've seen patients who have seen by non-board certified doctors and they had complications that became a problem because the doctor didn't have the experience to understand that the patient was having a complication and how to treat it early on and mitigate it. So this is another reason, you know, there is no procedure out there that doesn't have the potential for some type of a complication. And it's the understanding of the device, understanding of how skin heals, and experience handling complications that really separate. And what's important is the doctor more so than the device itself.
That makes sense. And talk to me a little bit about skin tightening. What options do you have there?
Skin tightening is usually done with devices that bypass the top layer of skin and penetrate to a deeper level to stimulate a deeper collagen stimulation and tightening of the skin. So the ones that we use in our office are the Thermage, the Exilis Pro, the radio frequency microneedling device. So we use three that is primarily for tightening. The Thermage and the Exilis are the most popular. And the reason is there is absolutely no downtime with either of those. Microneedling, the radio frequency microneedling, there is a bit of downtime with that. But Thermage and Exilis, there's none. And the difference is kind of like the Fraxel is more aggressive than the Clear and Brilliant. You have to do a series of the Clear and Brilliant. The Thermage is a more intense treatment. You do one and then you wait 3 months for the results. Whereas Exilis, you do a series of them every couple of weeks over that three-month period to achieve the results. And the Exilis per treatment is less expensive. So it's sort of like a layaway plan. You pay on it as you go. And I think the Exelys hurts a little bit less than the Thermage because its intensity is less. So again, we try to work with the patient, understand, if we have a working woman, she might want to go with the Thermage because she doesn't have the time to come here every 2 weeks for 4 to 6 treatments. And some people, they don't work and they like the idea of coming in and the treatment being less expensive and they sort of pay as they go, if you will. The other procedure in our practice that's extremely popular is the cool sculpting. And I'd like to say a little bit about cool sculpting and what's different about here. At the Lupo Center, our cool sculpting specialist is a registered nurse who's considered a master by the company, Allergan, who licensed the cool sculpting devices. I think that's a differentiator for us, is that you have a highly trained professional actually performing the treatments. The other thing that I think is a differentiator in our practice is we do dual sculpting, which means we have the capability of doing two areas at the same time. The beauty of this is it cuts down on your overall treatment time to get the results. So we like to have patients look good as quickly as possible, and we find that using dual sculpting techniques, two at the same time, make patients see great results at a faster rate.
Perfect. Okay, I know you talked a little bit about Dysport when we were up there on Botox, but could you just expand on Dysport for a little bit?
Dysport is another neuromodulator that came out after Botox. I do have some patients in my practice who have felt that Dysport works a little bit better for them. Either it kicks in quicker or lasts a little bit longer. But the major differentiator for Dysport is that it has a greater area of diffusion. A greater area of diffusion means that where you inject it, it spreads a little bit more. Now, this can be a good thing or a bad thing depending on the patient. And so the use of Dysport and Botox and even Xeomin, I think the message should be to patients that talk to your physician and make sure that your physician knows and understands the differences between these products. And they're not using the same one on everyone, that they do individualize the treatment and understand the differences in the neuromodulator so that when they do inject them, they're going to get the best possible outcome for each individual patient.
Perfect.
All right, I got to run.
All right, no problem. Thank you so much. This is very good. I appreciate your time.
And thank you for your time.
Of course. You have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.